Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
To New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's episode, I'm talking to director Juan Ortiz about his second feature, the blackly comic psychological thriller, Fingers. In the interview, Juan tells us how the weird story for the movie evolved over time, what the actor's initial reactions to the script were, whether he set out to make a kind of bizarre movie or if it just kind of naturally came out that way, and how he feels about the multiple comparisons the feature has got to The Greasy Strangler when it's been shown at festivals. He also tells us a little bit about some of the directorial influences on him when he was making the movie, which includes at least one very surprising one, plus what he's working on next. Before we get to all that, though, and it's a great interview that I'll be raring to get you to in just a sec, but just quickly, I'd like to remind you the best way you can support New Horror Express is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Radio Public, all that good stuff. It really would help us out. But now, on to the interview with Juan. Hello, Juan. Welcome to New Horror Express. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's no problem. So we're here to talk about your film, Fingers. And for the audience, can you give a quick synopsis of the film?
Fingers centers around a man that shows up to work missing a pinky and his boss that has even worse issues than showing up to work missing a pinky. She goes to find out what the heck's happening with her employee, and hilarity ensues.
And what was the initial inspiration for the movie? Where did that initial idea come from?
The inspiration for Fingers, you know, it was just an idea that popped in my head that I thought was kind of funny. And I had these loose ideas about following Walter and his issues. And then I was struggling with thinking about the world, like the whole universe didn't fit into my head, following Walter and having people following him. And then I kind of leaped into people's reaction to Walter. And that's something that excited me, because then Amanda was born and I started, you know, kind of picking from moments in my life where people said things or people are a certain way, and just kind of started building the Amanda character. And after I did that, that's when I saw this, you know, crazy a narrative. That's when it was born. Nothing specific happened to me. It wasn't anything like that. It was just an innocent little silly idea that I wanted to make crazy and make a little bit relevant to the world.
So there's the narrative about Walter and, you know, it's, you know, getting his fingers cut off. And there's the dual narrative about Amanda and her phobias. And she, in the film, watching the film, she kind of comes across as the more central figure. In the initial, when you were initially kind of writing the script, was Walter more the central figure?
Well, when I first started writing the script, Amanda was the person that was leading us to this journey for sure. But when I first thought of the idea, it was only Walter. And it was this girl that worked at a supermarket, and then it was other little things. And I didn't care to tell that story. I almost felt like it'd be better to have someone just looking at Walter and it triggering this thing inside of them. So when I actually sat down to write the script, it was all about Amanda. And, you know, her taking us on this journey. But initially, it was, you know, when it was first born in my brain, it was all about Walter.
Did you have any particular intentions when it came to like themes, or, you know, like there's a bit of satire there on therapy culture. You could possibly read some political subtext with the phobias and the fear of the other. Was any of that kind of in your head, or is that just kind of naturally arise out of the screenwriting process?
Well, certainly some of it was in my head. I mean, you can't put some of the stuff that I put in this movie without kind of wondering if you're going to offend someone and not caring. So I built Amanda knowing that she was going to represent some pretty, you know, awful things. And as far as like the Dr. Scotty character and the satire, I mean, yeah, I mean, all that stuff was planned. But as far as, you know, any kind of deeper themes, I mean, you know, I wanted to have the through line be just as unhinged as the characters. I like the contrast between Amanda and, say, Talkie Panda, and I also like their similarities, you know, because they're both pretty whacked out people, mm-hmm. and they both kind of come and go from one feeling to another emotionally. They kind of bounce back and forth. So I was excited to see what would happen if I wrote this. And, you know, I wrote it, and my friends, they read it and everyone liked it, and I was even more excited to see what would happen if we actually filmed it. So yeah, I did think a little about that, but I don't go, you know, these are just ideas that pop in my mind and see what happens type of thing.
And what's your kind of screenwriting process like? Are you the type of writer that writes like in a flood, or the type of writer that's kind of bits and pieces, like you can pull together things here and there and then it all forms a whole in the end?
What do you mean by bits and pieces? So what do you mean by that?
I suppose if it's a slower, faster process, I know that some writers kind of it kind of floods out of them, and some writers like they write a chunk and then they go away and they come back, and, you know,
right, okay,
it all kind of slowly builds to a bigger picture.
I think with me, the answer is both. Specifically with Fingers, it came out pretty quick. I mean, I wrote this thing and probably. And it was less than like a month. And then I did some rewrites here and there, which is really quick for me. I mean, if I'm writing a feature, to get a first draft, maybe it takes 4 or 5 months or 6 months or 9 months. It's taken me 3 years. You know, there's ideas that I have that I wrote. I remember one idea I wrote 60 pages in 3 weeks. And that was, I don't know, 13 years ago. And I still haven't finished it because I just don't have enough ideas. Like, maybe I don't know what that one is about. I don't know who those characters are, you know. So my process is just to sit down, and every time I sit down, I hope I get a new idea and just keep, you know, plugging away at it. And, you know, with Fingers, when I was done with my draft, I mean, I did many rewrites, and I would go from page one, and then I would, you know, just read up into page 70, if that's where I left off, and then I would just start writing. So if I got to page 90, I'd start at page one, read everything. And it's all in my head, and then add on to page 90. It's it can be exhausting doing that, but that's the work that you need to put into it. Whether it's going to take a year or 2 years or all flood out of you, I mean, writers don't get to choose that. At least I don't. I don't get to choose how quick it all comes about. I just go and work and keep on doing it until I think it's good enough to show people.
As you mentioned, the story. The film is pretty unhinged. There's a lot of weird things going on. What was the kind of reactions you got like when, you know, you first gave the script to actors? How did they react? And
I remember hearing back from some people that ended up not being cast in the movie, and their response was they didn't know whether they were allowed to laugh or not. And I thought that was a pretty safe place to be for a movie like Fingers. So I just take that as a badge of honor and you know, say, okay, thank you. And there was a few people that just weren't interested in it because they admitted that they didn't know if they were offended or not.
How difficult was it finding that balance? Because obviously there's a lot of laughs in the movie that are kind of slightly uncomfortable laughs, but that could teeter on the edge of being like, that, you know, it's too uncomfortable to laugh at, but like it for the most part it just seems to get it right. It's like there the laugh's there, even though it's a dark, you know, a dark humor.
I think that's just has to be your natural language, you know, like in my head, listen, there are people who don't laugh at this stuff, you know, like the actor that didn't want to take the role. There are people that it just doesn't work for, and other people that it does work for. And I'm not scared to put it out there. You know, what people laugh at, they will laugh at it. Not everyone gets the joke, and not everyone's going to laugh.
I was thinking as well, I've talked to other people who have made pretty strange movies, and I was wondering, is it ever the intention to make a weird movie? Because I know there's a lot of filmmakers and a lot of writers out there that just have like a naturally what the mainstream would consider an off-kilter sensibility, and they write to that sensibility. They don't necessarily think, I'm going to make a really weird movie. What was it like for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I guess I knew Fingers was, you know, a little weird and a little odd, but you don't really know what you have until you're watching it with people. I mean, it's kind of a scary thing. I don't seek out to make something that's just bizarre, like, oh, my next one's going to be crazy and bizarre. I just have stories that I want to tell. And, you know, I hope people think that it's not too far off, or maybe I'm happy that it's off. The answer is I don't plan that. I mean, I know that Fingers was going to be different, but I don't know. I feel like some of the reactions some of the reactions have been, I don't think it's that weird. I don't think it's that strange, but apparently for some people it is. So I guess you don't really know. Like, I make some more movies and put them out there, and then, you know, I guess you find out, like, you know, what your fingerprints are. People start reacting to your voice and they'll tell you. But as far as a design, when you're writing your screenplay, I guess I don't really think about that.
Yeah, it is always interesting listening to other people's reactions to things. Like, I feel like I've maybe got like a naturally weird sensibility, or I'm naturally drawn to weirder films, because like, I watched your film and I would say it's a weird movie, it's an off-kilter movie, it's a quirky movie, but it's not like out and out crazy. And I have read some things that like other people are like, do seem to think that, like, it's downright bizarre and totally out there. And I'm like, I've seen much, much weirder movies.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're absolutely right. So I don't know. I mean, the audience, I guess, will just tell you. I remember watching, gosh, this is back in the day. Was it Summer of Sam, the Spike Lee movie, when it came out. And I was looking forward to see that movie so bad, you know? Mm-hmm. And that movie kind of has, if I remember, I haven't seen it in a long time. It was, you know, the first act of the movie, it takes a while for it to get going. And it just, it's just hanging out with these characters. And I was just eating it up. Like, I was just loving it, like adoring every damn frame of that. And I sat back in my chair and I'm looking around at these faces. And I thought about what Spike Lee was doing with his movie. And I thought, you know, I love this. I don't know if other people are going to love this, but I love it. It's just one of those things where, you know, you make your own pot, you put it out there, and I don't know, hopefully enough people want more.
I don't know. Like, there's been instances in the cinemas where I've had like similar experiences of, I remember one that stands out in my head was, I went to see the Nicholas Winding Refn film, Only God Forgives.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen that.
I have seen that, yeah.
Yeah, it's mental. And the cop character, the kind of Thai cop character, is kind of symbolic as the angel of vengeance and all this, and does karaoke. Like, I thought that's a really fun character. I was really entertained. But I also felt that I was the only person in the cinema watching it that was in any way entertained by this movie. Like, you could feel the kind of seething rage that people had, that other people were feeling around me, that they'd spent money on this. And I walked out of the cinema and there was lots of people walking out going, I hated that movie. I don't know what I really like, because they obviously seen Drive and loved Drive, and
right,
that's the only reason they haven't seen the movie. They're like, just outraged. just curious that they spent more on this.
Yeah, there's was it New Orleans Port of Call, the Werner Herzog movies. It's the same exact thing. It's the same exact thing. I'm watching this with my friends, and then I didn't see it in the movies. So we're all sitting around the couch watching this movie. When that guy's breakdancing and Nicolas Cage is telling him to keep dancing or whatever's going on over there, I was blown away. Or Nicolas Cage staring at a lizard for like 2 minutes. I'm blown away by this stuff. And my friends, they were like, meh. And I just didn't understand them. Like, how could you not love this? It's just crazy. So.
I had a lot of fun with that movie. I really did all the kind of mad iguana stuff and all the furious overacting between Val Kilmer and Nicolas Cage.
Unbelievable, yeah. And Exhibit, the rapper Exhibit, he was amazing in it. He was so good. Oh my God.
Oh dear. Yeah, we are obviously amongst the outliers.
And that's scary. As a guy who wants to have a career making movies, it's like, I don't know, that's kind of a scary place to live. You know, it'd be cool to actually make a living making movies, which, you know, I don't do yet. My friends who are making movies, they don't really make a living making movies yet. And I'm starting to meet some people that I think do that at these film festivals. So they've done it enough where it's just like the income is there enough. And, you know, I've met people that where it just started happening for them, where they don't have to do side editing jobs anymore. And they don't have to do, you know, these odd jobs that they could just focus on their work. And it's interesting to meet some of those filmmakers before. They haven't changed, you mean after, but you just, it's good because I know it's possible. But being one of these outlier people is kind of a scary thing when you want to take someone's money and go make a movie. But at the same time, man, like, I just have to write what's in my head and just keep doing that, because that's really the only thing that makes me happy. I mean, yesterday I got back to writing and I hadn't written this thing that I'd started like 3 or 4 months ago in a really long, you know, for a really long time. And it just felt great to not think about work and just live in this, you know, layered universe that's very different than Fingers, very different than everything that I've ever done, and is more of like a sci-fi thing. And just to be there, and even in the middle of writing, I'm thinking to myself, like, is this for enough people? Like, you know, I'm gonna need a little bit of money for this. Like, is it for enough? And that's the scary thing. But I can't let that scare me, right, where I'm not writing from, you know, my heart, or not writing from my you know, from ideas that I like. I'd have to do that. And if I live in a very, you know, strange corner of the cinematic universe, I only hope to pay the bills doing it, not to get rich, which I'll totally be fine with.
I suppose sometimes it can be getting exposed to enough people, because, I mean, for example, this year, you know, Jordan Peele's new movie, Us, it has a pretty cookie sensibility, but
it does.
You know, it got enough eyes on it that there was a wide enough range of people who caught it that were like, oh yeah, you know, I can hook on to this kind of weird sensibility this movie's got.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's definitely movies that are that do, you know, kind of catch on, certainly with Jordan Peele. But it's kind of strange that Jordan Peele, like, he was famous for a long time. He did that show on Comedy Central for a long time, and he wanted to make this horror movie, and it still was like a super low budget horror movie. Like, not even someone famous from Hollywood could get real money to make a movie. He had to make a movie for, you know, I mean, was it $3 million budget or something like that? And that had to make $100 million so we can get a decent budget for his next one. I mean, I don't know. It's a scary thing, but we'll just keep plugging away, I guess.
Do you think that there will be more opportunities for horror filmmakers or filmmakers of a weird sensibility on the back of the success of Us and also Midsommar? Both, or do you think that's like exclusive ones that have a weird arty sensibility and other weird sensibilities might be drowned out?
I do think there could be a future, but, you know, the gateway, like the people that are putting those movies out there, you know, it's not like, I mean, I don't see an influx of low budget filmmakers playing at the cinema. Like, I don't see that. I mean, certainly like A24, they're like the hot indie thing, but, and, you know, yes, Us is, it was successful and it was kind of an odd movie. So I don't know. Like, I hope that other companies that are smaller see that there's talent out there. Like, I hope these companies are going to Chattanooga film festival and are going to Fright Fest and, you know, seeing what's at these smaller genre festivals and seeing, you know, that or just even testing the waters to see what kind of talent is out there. I hope that they're doing that. Do I think that there's hope? Yeah, sure. I think there's hope. I mean, Midsommar came out, and then after that came out, like what, 3 weeks later, like the director's cut came out. Like, that's crazy. Like, that's amazing if that happened. You know, when I found out that I should have saw, but I didn't get the chance to see it. There was more cult stuff. If it was like an extra half hour of the last act, I would have ran to go see the movie because that was some of the greatest things that I've seen in a movie in a while. But I feel like, I don't know, I think there's hope. Yeah. To answer your question, sure. I think that there's hope. And obviously with various platforms, you know, being born, who knows what the next new thing is. I mean, Netflix is obviously huge and bloated and whatever, and you know, what Apple's doing their thing, and you have all these different companies that need the content. So I suppose the opportunities will be there. I suppose so.
To go back specifically to your film, I was also wondering, was kind of everything there in the script? I was wondering how much the actors brought to their roles and if they did anything that, you know, wasn't already there in the script. One of the things I was thinking about was like the opening and like Jeremy Gardner's like weird dance and stuff. Like, was it all there, or like did any of the actors like come in with like little weird touches?
Well, Jeremy is a special person. I mean, when we first started, he leaned in, you know, and asked me, you know, how much, you know, how far can he go with this character? And my answer is, you know, do whatever the hell you want. So working with Jeremy is hyper special because if you give him that freedom, you don't know what is going to happen. He's just going to make what you wrote better. That's what he does. And he's always been that way. And I've known him since we grew up together. But each actor is different. Some actors are just, you know, better to kind of just say, hey, you know, just do it like this. And they can just nail that. And some actors want that space and other actors don't want that space. So with the dancing, it was funny because I don't remember my exact direction with Jeremy. I was just like, hey, do a dance, and he started doing his thing, and it was great. It was fantastic. There was a few times where, you know, you just let Jeremy run and capture what he does. It's really great. You know, working with actors, it can be a scary thing for a director. And on Fingers, it wasn't scary. Like, I was just so happy every time I got, you know, the performance, every time I, you know, they're doing their thing, and you know, I would just get giddy. I would get, you know, get really damn excited because I knew I had some really, really great things in the edit. And, you know, working with Sabino is fantastic too, because that role is not easy. It's not easy to jump from this manic thing to this other thing. The pieces are coming together, but when the pieces come together, they're different shapes. It's like gluing a broken glass together. That's basically what Amanda is at the end of this movie, and that's not easy to do. So I don't know if I answered your question or not. It's kind of blabbing. Sorry.
No, you did. I was also, you were saying there you've been friends with Jeremy for a long time. So did you write that role with him in mind or not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I wrote that role with Jeremy, and I was excited to do that. And you know, I've written a bunch of screenplays. There's a few roles that I've written with Jeremy in mind, so hopefully we'll work together again soon.
And as for the rest of the cast, how did they kind of come together? I saw that both you and Sabine worked on the Florida project. Was that
Sabina? Yeah, I met Sabina on the Florida project that was filmed in Kissimmee, Florida, not too far from where I live. And we were just pals, and I gave her the script, and she, you know, she read it and she really liked it. And she asked if she can audition for it. And I was like, yeah, sure. Here's a section of the script. Do your thing. And I just thought she was fantastic. And other people I met just through auditions that we had in town around Orlando. They just showed up for the auditions, and we plucked them from there.
And what about Michael St. Michael?
Michael St. Michael's is great. So I met him at the Chattanooga Film Festival, Chris Dorch's film festival down there in Tennessee. It's a blast. I went there for the first time like 3 years ago, and Jeremy and Christian were just kind of hanging out there. This is a year after they did Tex Montana, I think. So I went up there just to hang out with them because I was working in Atlanta. So it's just like a, you know, it's a 3-hour drive or something like that. And I bumped into him. He was there because Greasy Strangler was playing and I met him. And after I had spoken to him, just saying hello, and he was such a nice guy, I just could not, I started, the idea of Fingers, I believe, was in my mind, or I started writing the script, or I was done with a draft or something like that. And I just could not unsee Michael St. Michael's as Fox. I thought he was like this perfect oddball gangster. Like, so I didn't want someone that was really, really harsh. And I think I'm stealing this from Jim Jarmusch's Ghost Dog. The gangsters in that movie are just so bizarre to me. Just, I mean, they're dancing around, they're putting powder in their buttholes. I mean, they're doing all kinds of crazy things. And I think when I was building Fox in my mind, I wanted him to be, you know, like one of these fun kind of gangsters, and I just could not see anyone else but him. And so I just reached out to him and said, hey, we met in Chattanooga, would you consider it? And he did, and it was great.
Do you think, I was wondering as well, do you think the film would draw as many comparisons to the Greasy Strangler in reviews if it didn't have him in it?
I would say no, because it's really, I mean, yeah, it's bizarre, but I don't know if the tone is, I mean, I don't know. It's funny. I would say not. I mean, Michael St. Michael's is, you know, such an interesting guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be the Greasy Strangler and to have something like that in my movie, I think that's probably the reason why, but that's fine. I'll take it. I love the Greasy Strangler. I thought it was hysterical.
Yeah, I think it's a very funny movie as well. But
crying laughing watching that movie. I mean, Michael St. Michael's is the detective. He comes in that house. I lost it for like, I don't know, 6 minutes. It was just ridiculously great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that movie as well. But the reason I asked that question was because watched the movie, I did read some of the reviews from Fright Fest and stuff.
Yeah.
And it got compared to the Greasy Strangler a lot. And I was like, kinda, but kinda not. Like, I didn't feel, it didn't have the same anti-comedy thing. It didn't have the same, like, really ridiculously extending scenes. I mean, Fingers, you know, kind of extend scenes a little bit, but
yeah,
I don't know. Like, I was just like, yeah, you know, because they were kind of saying like, oh, if you've seen Greasy Strangler, you'll catch the tone of this movie, and I was like, will you?
I mean, I think that some of the people have also said things like, you know, I was expecting Greasy Strangler, didn't get that, so you know, that's also a reaction. Is people coming in thinking there's going to be, you know, lots of wieners or something. Is not the case. My apologies.
But I mean, there's certainly still plenty of interesting things going on. I was wondering, like, in terms of your direction, how did you kind of direct the actor? You know, what was it you kind of said to the actors? Because there's obviously a certain kind of acting style going on. It's like, in some of the characters, it seems like almost kind of deliberately stilted. So how did you kind of convey that, and, you know, that kind of, that you wanted this sort of performance?
Well, I think I think they got that from the script, and they're doing their thing, and I'm like nodding in approval, right? So it's not, some of the stuff you can't teach on set, you know. You just hope, you cast the right people, right? You audition people, and you see kind of how they are, and you know that you can kind of, you know, you can kind of shape them and mold them, you know, the right way. I didn't have to direct them too much with regards to that, because the script is just ridiculous at times. And the humor in it, I think you just have to kind of get the joke. So I didn't really struggle with my actors and directing them, you know, to kind of recognize what this was. Everyone kind of knew what this was. So, but generally, like, I don't know if I'm good with directing actors. I don't know that. I'm probably the worst. There were a couple of frustrating days on set where people were like, what am I doing? I'm like, just, it's fine. It's fine. Let us work this out. It's going to be fine. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a lot of that, I think they just kind of got, yeah, from reading that script. So
with the kind of off-kilter, slightly stilted thing. Were you, is that just your thing that you're like, I want to write in this way, or do you feel like you're influenced by any other filmmakers? It made me think a little bit of, the films of like Yorgos Lanthimos, for example.
Right. And I don't know how much of that comes through in Fingers, but I adore that guy's work. I'm sure there's like other filmmakers that, I don't know, maybe I'm trying to do that. Maybe I should, I mean, you're right. He's a big deal. I love the Coen brothers. You know, I think they had a huge influence on me growing up, and there's many, many filmmakers that had a huge influence. So I think that it's interesting to think about my next movies and how different they are from Fingers. Like, I don't know if you've seen Jennifer Help Us or not. I mean, it's a super backyardigan kind of movie with like no money and an iPhone. Tonally, it's very different than Fingers.
I've not seen it, but like researching the interview, I did read up on it, and I was like, oh, I should check this out. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, most people don't finish it, but the people that do seem to really enjoy it. But tonally, it's not Fingers. It's very different. So, Okay. Yeah, you know, I guess I get a lot from, you know, a lot. I love all kinds of directors. You know, a lot of people talk about their inspirations, and still the guy I always think about when I think about the directors that have an impact, I mean, obviously like Tarantino, there's stuff in Fingers that's very Pulp Fiction that I'm like, I didn't even realize that until after I was editing. I'm like, ooh, that's pretty similar. And then like, but Steven Spielberg is a massive influence on like every filmmaker, right? Like, I don't know if you could see that in Fingers, but
not really. I mean, like, I could definitely, the other ones I can sense and feel like the kind of little bit Tarantino and that kind of the Coens thing, you know, like that,
yeah
very Coens thing of like it, like these like little small incidents like becoming like these big, you know, they all kind of pile up, and the little mistakes kind of all pile up into this kind of disaster, you know, like.
So fun. It's so fun to write that stuff.
So I can definitely pick up those, but Spielberg, I suppose like he's an iconic filmmaker that bleeds into a lot of cinema, but.
Right, like I'm not saying I purposely take things from Spielberg, but I could probably safely say that if Spielberg wasn't as big as he was when I was growing up, like, I don't know, like, would I be looking to movies? Because he was such an easy thing to look to when you're a kid, to want to be, you know? And I would like to think that I would be, but it was just such an easy thing to look at. And his name was on every movie coming out in the 80s, practically anything that I loved, so. And maybe from there, when I start paying attention, it's the Coen brothers or a Jim Jarmusch movie or, different kinds of pictures that really, really that I kind of, you know, sucked in and watched over and over and over again. Like Raising Arizona is like one of my all-time favorite movies. I just saw it on repeat. I just would watch it again and again and again. And there were a few movies that I did that too.
And I mean, that's another hopeful sign. I mean, like the Coen brothers definitely have a weird sensibility, and they've built a successful 30-year plus.
Yeah, that's true. There's hope. There's hope.
There definitely is. I was wondering as well, because your film was at Fright Fest, and Sadistic Intentions was at Fright Fest. There's a couple of crossover casting with Jeremy and Taylor. Were you involved in that, or did that just kind of come naturally? It just so happened that, you know, you're filming around the same time. It just so happened that you cast two of the same people.
Yeah, it was just a natural thing. I remember when Jeremy and Taylor went off to film a Sadistic, and then we played at the Chattanooga Film Festival. And I guess, and then after that, we played at Fright Fest. So yeah, the first two festivals Fingers played with Sadistic. So yeah, it's a pretty special thing. I think we filmed Fingers first, and then, but Sadistic got finished first. It's how long Fingers took to kind of get together or to put together. So yeah, it was just a cool thing that happened. And I got to meet Eric, and he's a good person. He's a great guy.
I was also thinking further on influences. There's obviously, I think on the score is quite an kind of 80s sounding score. And I've read that on your first movie, there's kind of 70s, 80s thing going on there. And there's obviously an appreciation of kind of exploitation films or grindhouse films, but it's just a kind of topping instead of, you know, the many, many films that are essentially just kind of parodies of that era. Are you conscious of staying away from that thing?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, a topping, because I think that's what it is. I mean, honestly, I love all kinds of movies. I don't really have a bias of a genre, but I love what I love. And I think that I don't know if I'll ever like go full blown homage to any 80s movies that I love, or I probably will never do that, but I certainly will, you know, pepper that stuff in there because that's part of my DNA as well. You know, me loving that and it coming through my filter. I'll give you an example. I'm writing the screenplay. I finished about a few months ago, and in the middle of writing it, I realized that a character in this screenplay was essentially a character from a movie that I've seen, I don't know, over 100 times. And I just stop writing and I just look at the screen like, damn, like that is exactly what I'm getting this from. And it was a good feeling, like, hell yeah, like that's how that's supposed to happen. You know, like these things do live in your mind. And when you're writing them, you're gonna pull from what you know, you're gonna pull from someone that says something and it catches you, or a style that you like. You know, it's what you're supposed to do as a writer, in my opinion.
Was horror, you know, I mean, how did you get into horror? Was it one of the first things you got into? Obviously, there's a bunch of things going on in this movie. You know, it's a crime, comedy, horror, drama, mystery, you know. So,
yeah. So my sister was friends with someone who owned a video store. And so she would go hang out at her friend's house over the weekend, and she'd always come over with like 20 movies, 30 movies, like a bag full of movies. And that was like my introduction to like my first full access to kind of watching what came through that door. And that led me to watching, you know, movies like Christine or Cujo and things like that. And I, in Sleepaway Camp. And so I just couldn't turn away from some of the stuff. And even before that, and I told the story at Fright Fest, was Gremlins, oddly enough. And I remember watching that movie and being deathly scared of Gizmo because I thought it was this weird Satan baby. And I was just real, I was a kid. I was really damn scared. And then I shied away from the movie theater screen, and I'm complaining and I want to leave, and my sisters are threatening to beat me up if I keep complaining. And then I've got, you know, I started talking to myself, Juan, it's just a movie. Gizmo's not real. Fine. It's just a puppet. It's fake. It's cool. Just watch this movie, dude. You love movies. You want to make movies. And I looked up at the screen and then you see Gremlins, actual Gremlins. And I just freaked out. That was not a good spot for me to be. And so my introduction to horror was probably Gremlins and me being scared of that. And then, you know, obviously getting older and then, you know, watching whatever came through, came into my house because my sister was friends with someone who owned a video store that was around for a couple of years. So, yeah.
That's really interesting. I've had a lot of conversations with people, and my introduction to horror was I saw like Child's Play when I was like 7.
Okay.
And it freaked me the fuck out. And I then at that point I was like, I have nothing, I want nothing to do with horror. And then I got into my horror in my early teens. But like, I've heard a lot of stories that like of people like that who were like initially traumatized by horror and were like, no, not for me. And then, but then got into it.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to be scared of something and then look at it again and not be scared anymore. You know, it's like in an instant, you just got older, you just got wiser, you know, you got smarter. And for me, it was Gizmo.
And also, the theme of the podcast seems to be weird sensibilities. Joe Dante set out to make a kid's film and he made Gremlins.
Yeah, I mean, that's brilliant. Exactly. So That's scary stuff, man. Like the head in the microwave.
Yeah, it really
is. Stripe in the Christmas tree. I mean, you know, the gremlin that gets juiced, its head gets juiced. I mean, like, there is crazy stuff. And then Stripe at the end, like, he's like, he's white and he's just all weird looking and he's still living. Like, he's still coming after. Oh, man. Yeah, that's crazy. That's a sick, sick movie. Ugh.
It really is. And it's like, you forget quite how weird and dark it is. And then you just think about, like, yeah, Joe Dante was sitting directing this thinking, yep, kids are going to eat this up.
Yeah, the kids are going to love it. They're going to love it. It's great. Oh, man. Scared of Gizmo. Unbelievable.
Oh, you were talking about your experience at Fright Fest there as well. You were saying that. At Fright Fest, how have your festival experiences been? What's it like watching the movie with audiences, and what is your kind of audience feedback you've got at those festivals?
Well, my experience is, you know, I'm just rattled with nerves going into it, I suppose. I'm just like a wreck. And then I sit down and I calm down and watch the movie, and then, you know, I'm okay. And then people walk up to you and ask you questions, and it's fine. With Chattanooga, that's kind of how it was. With Fright Fest, I signed an autograph for the first time in my life. That was cool. That was really cool. So I think the feedback out of Fright Fest was very positive, and it was a really good experience, even though I was very, very ill. But it was just wonderful.
And were there any differences in the reactions in terms of the reactions you've got in the States and the reactions you got at the British reactions at Fright Fest?
Well, these are genre festivals. I mean, Chattanooga Film Fest and Fright Fest are, you know, genre festivals. So I think the reactions were pretty much the same, you know. I think that, you know, being in London, it's obviously different than being in the States. So I don't know if there was more excitement. Maybe it was just exciting for me because I was in London for the first time. You know, it was all in all great. I mean, we've had so far two just wonderful film festival experiences. And, you know, and London's a pretty special place, but Chattanooga's a special place too.
I was also wondering, we've talked a little bit about your first film, Jennifer, Help Us. What made you decide to dive directly into doing a feature? I've talked to quite a few directors, and often they've directed a few shorts first and then got into a feature, but you went straight ahead.
Well, that's debatable. I mean, Jennifer Help Us, I think, is 68 minutes, so some people would consider it to be a long short or a short feature, depends who you ask. So, I mean, I haven't messed with short films too much. Maybe there's a few things I shot here and there, maybe two or three things. I've always, you know, the few times I've tried it, just try to do, you know, a feature, because that's what I write. Like, I don't spend the time and the energy writing 20 pages and perfecting 20 pages. I just want to tell a whole story. And when I'm done telling it, it's usually over 75 pages, 80 pages, 85 pages. So that's just naturally what, when I'm done telling my story, I have a feature, you know, so. No reason to go make a short film, but other people, you know, they see it a different way. I think Ari Aster made a few short films and then he got to make Hereditary. But yeah, I just dive right into the feature because I just think it's just something natural. Like, this is what I want to do.
Also, I was wondering, like, going back to Fingers again, was there any particular notion of kind of offsetting the off-kilterness or the weirdness? Because I noticed, like, the look of the film, the style of the film is quite naturalistic, which kind of, you know, obviously the some of the actions and some of the performances are quite strange and off-kilter, but, you know, it looks quite real. You know, it's not like it's in Dago colors or anything like that to kind of add to the weirdness. Was that kind of, you were conscious of that, of being like, oh, maybe people will find this too weird if I, like, make the visuals weird as off kilter as well?
Well, it wasn't really that. It's more so that I think that these people exist in our world. Like, I don't doubt that at all. Like, I think there are people clearly that are like Talkie Panda that exist in our world. There are clearly people like Amanda that exist in our world. Even crazier. So that's what the world looks like, and then these people are in it. So there's no reason for me aesthetically to go wild with, you know, various colors and things like that. Even in Jennifer Helpless, like one of the things you go to watch it is the cinematography. I mean, yeah, we didn't have any money. Yes, it was on an iPhone 4S. And some of this, I mean, like a lot of it, all of it, it's, I love the idea of just having this beautiful composition or something that's just beautiful. And here are these people kind of not ruining it, but just walking past it. Or maybe in some cases ruining the frame because of what they're doing or whatever. I don't think I'll ever do anything that's over stylistic aesthetically. I don't think I'll ever do it. Maybe I will, but it's not something that I'm interested in.
So you will never make anything like, I don't know, like Mandy or something.
Right. Now I appreciate it. You know, even watching Mandy, one of the things I said to myself was like, I don't know if I'll ever do anything like that. It's not but I could be, you know, maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe someone shows me something. They're like, well, I don't know. Like, what if you did that story like this? And I'm willing to adapt, but, you know, I never even thought about going a little crazy with the look of the movie. I always wanted that to be very grounded.
And how smooth was the shoot? Was it challenging at all, or did it go quite smoothly?
It went pretty smoothly. I mean, we shot for first round like 14 or 15 days, something like that, 13 and a half days. And then we did do some reshoots. There was some padding in the first act we had to do. And we had to, you know, do some reshoots and things like that. But, you know, it was mostly smooth.
And what are you currently working on now or working on next? Or are you just kind of following the kind of festival dates of fingers? What's coming up for you?
Well, I have a screenplay that I'm done with. I have another one that I'm almost... that I'm, you know, starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I hopefully one of these two things are next for me. That'd be fantastic. But if I have to write a super hyper low budget thing, then I will, I'll do that.
And was it, you mentioned a kind of sci-fi project you've been working on earlier on in the interview.
Yeah, what about that?
I was just wondering if you could go and tell us any more about that, or if you just want to keep those projects under wraps.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to say anything yet. It's hysterical because yesterday it just changed. I got this idea. I'm like, oh, great, fantastic. Like, this is going to be a little different. So even if I told you, it would be, you know, it would just be different by the time it ended up being, you know, something for the world. That the world can see.
Well, it's been great to have you on the podcast. It's been great talking to you, and hopefully we can have you on the show again sometime, whatever project you come out with next.
All right, Scott. Thanks for having me. I had a blast.
That was my guest, Juan, there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. Plus, thank you, listener, for tuning in to this latest edition of New Horror Express. That is nearly all for this episode, but before I head on out, I'd like to remind you the best way you can support the show is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, and Spotify. It would be greatly appreciated. Finally, remember to join us again in 2 weeks' time, when we will have another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya!